What is food security? Is food security something that everyone should be worrying about? Or is food security an issue only government needs to worry? In 2020, and in light of this COVID situation, personally, I think food security is everyone's business. The food security, as defined by the United Nations Committee on World Food Security, it means that all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutrition foods that meets their food preference and dietary needs for an active and healthy life. I know it's a lot of process, but this podcast is all about the growing, the making, the keeping, the storing, distribution, everything about food, but not just about the taste. Hi, my name is Ip, and welcome to the Functional Food Podcast. Right, so today's guest may be the OG of plant-based business. So his family actually has been in this plant-based vegetarian food business for the past 50 years. Oh my gosh. And they have been manufacturing vegetarian food throughout Asia and North America. And then in 2010, Eugene actually opened Sophie's Kitchen, which is the first plant-based seafood alternative that actually got really, really popular and won numerous awards and recognitions. And companies like Pepsi and AAA love it. So just last year, Eugene took this alternative protein to the microorganism level, and then he started another new venture in Singapore called Sophie's Bionutrients. From then, he won a grand prize of $1 million at the Livability Challenge 2019 with this new project. So now they're going to start his first protein fermentation facility in Singapore. Today's episode is going to be great, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you have any comments, you know, you can always leave it in the review and let us know, so to help us improve our show. Without further ado, let's begin today's conversation with Eugene from Sophie's Bionutrients. Hey Eugene, thanks for coming.
Hey, welcome and thank you for having me.
And also, just to understand a bit, you are in this space called microalgae, and it's very different from what is being shown to the world, like, you know, the plant-based world and the alternative protein like cellular agriculture. So maybe could you explain a bit on what is microalgae protein?
To be exact, we're trying to find a way to use microorganism as human nutrition in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, to set it broadly. But along the way, we found that microalgae is actually the most, or should I say the best candidate for this purpose. Reason being that it packed all the nutrients that never seen before in any kind of microorganism. Say for example, you know, we all know that microalgae has a DHA, omega-3, mm-hmm. and on top of that, its protein profile is just perfect. You know, if you are professional enough, there's a term called PDCast. Basically, it's just a jargon telling you that, like, how perfect this protein is. So in the industry, the best PDCast number is whey protein, which is cow milk. Mm-hmm. It is 1. And microalgae protein got the same group, which is also 1, you know.
Okay.
And that itself tells you that how complete this protein is. So what we're doing is that we're doing something differently than all the thousands of other microalgae companies in the world, is that not only we're trying to grow the microalgae at a most cost-efficient way, but also we're trying to extract the protein out of the microalgae so that in the food formulations for the food manufacturers, they can use it widely. So say, for example, before the microalgae protein can possibly can be just eaten directly mm-hmm. as a supplement. Now, with our technology, our products, our protein flour, you can use it in the plant milk, in the bakery, in even burger patties, you know, if you want to make make a plant-based burger, and all kinds of tofu to make it into a tofu-like product. Mm-hmm. Even plant-based dairy, you know, plant-based cheese if you want, and even the cosmetic industry can possibly even use it because the purity is so high that, you know, the cosmetic industry, even the pharmaceutical industry down the road can even use it. So that's the difference between our approach, and that's what we're doing right now.
So does it mean that you are building a fundamental building blocks for the future? Instead of soil beans, people will come to you as a raw material?
Exactly. That's what exactly what we're doing is that, you know, look at the soy. You brought up a very good example. You know, soy has been used so widely in this world today. You know, mm-hmm. on the protein side, you have soy. On the oil side, you got palm oil. So these are the two things that's used pretty much in all kinds of industry in the world today. You know, soy is used in human consumption. Soy is used in animal feed. Soy is used in the supplement. Soy is even used in some of the things that you don't eat, like the shoe wax, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's amazing. It's crazy, you know? And so that's why, you know, we have so much problem today with the plantation, with the deforestation, is that, you know, with more and more people coming into the world, you need to have more and more space for not just for the animals, but even for their feed. In this case, soy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Brazil, for example, took out a lot of forest just for that. But you can't blame them because, I mean, there's a demand in the market, you know. So what we're trying to do is that we're trying to say to the world that, hey, you don't need to deforest the trees anymore. You can use our technology to do everything in a bioreactor. Basically, a bioreactor is just a fermentation tank, you know. Mm-hmm. Do it that way, then, you know, you can put it in the urban area, in the urban setting. And then instead of hundreds of hectares of space, now you just need one building, one big building that's less than 0.02 hectares of space. And then on top of that, because the speed of the algae growth, you know, for example, soy needs about 2 to 3 months to grow,
yes.
to be harvested.
Yep.
Our algae, just 3 days. And then because the fast speed, the water, the energy, everything you need is dramatically reduced. And then that's what we're trying to provide to the world, a really efficient alternative to what we're using today.
So you mentioned fermentation. Is this process similar to beer?
I guess you can say so, you know. It is somewhat similar to beer, but not entirely. Because remember, in the fermentation tank,
mm-hmm.
For beer, the only live thing is possibly the yeast.
Yes.
And it's not live, right? And in our fermentation tank, it's the reverse. The most of the things are alive and well, which is, in this case, algae, microalgae. And so you're like, you know, With so many years of work with microalgae, you feel like it's almost like a pet, you know?
Yeah.
It has, you know, if you own a pet, you know, you gotta pay attention to its mood. Why? Because if you don't make him happy, it will create all the mess. Make it happy, you know, you guys can kind of coexist happily together, right? And same thing with the microalgae, is that you want it to produce something, then you got to know this something you want it to produce. Do you have to make it happy or do you have to make it stressful? You know, sometimes you have to make it stressful in order to create the thing you want, but sometimes you have to make it happy in order to create the thing you want. And in our case, the protein, mm-hmm. you have to make it happy. The happier it is, the more protein it will create.
So this is not like a byproduct.
No, this is not a byproduct. This is a major component of our algae. So this microorganism, it has a few different parts, major parts of a thing in its body. Number one, everyone knows is lipid, which is fat.
Yep.
That's why microalgae previously was used widely for the biofuel project back in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s, and even up until today, you know. Mm-hmm. The other big component is protein. So depending on the species, some of the species have a lot of fat. Some of the species has a lot of protein, you know. It's just like you and I, we're both Chinese, but then again, we're not necessarily the same weight or mm-hmm. same fat in the body. It's just like that. And another big component is carbohydrate. And so all these three components, coupled with other tiny nutrients that compose the algae, you know. And so what we're trying to do right now is try to use and extract that protein part.
So the extraction will involve pulling it out of the creature?
The extraction will involve killing the creature, yes, unfortunately, you know, just like every in the food industry. But then again, in this case, because it's a microorganism,
yep.
So I guess the ethical issue is not a problem there, number one. And number two is that microalgae has been studied as food for, I would say, almost 100 years or even more, even longer, especially the Japanese spend a lot of time and a lot of years studying it. And so there's a lot of technology developed already. So it's not really rocket science, yeah.
Okay, so this is not really about ethics, but you are kind of miniaturizing the whole animal industry into basically a room. And with your raw material, there is no limit, right, to what we can make.
Well, I'm not trying to kill the animal industry, animal protein or animal farming.
Uh-huh.
I think the world possibly can never do away with animal protein, animal farming per se, you know. Just look at the Asian culture, you know. In a lot of Asian cultures, meat is medicinal. Meat is holy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Meat is really something you can never replace. I should say meat and seafood, not just meat, you know. And that's the case in a lot of other world cultures as well, is that, you know, meat has this very special place. But going forward, you will just see that the animal farming, not only it's not sustainable, but also it will have a huge problem to contain its cost. And so more and more, animal protein will become for that 1%, or maybe should I say for that 5 or 10%. And what about the rest of the 99% of us who cannot afford expensive meat? That's where people are talking about nowadays, plant-based protein, using plants. But then again, we're saying, wait a minute. If the global population keep growing this way, is plant-based protein really the answer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, our calculation shows that possibly not, you know? If you keep growing the people, growing the population, your plantation of the plants is again going to be a problem. And that's why a lot of people like us, you know, you look at cell-based protein, you know, the cultured meat. You look at us, single cell protein, which is protein from things like microalgae in some cases like yeast mm-hmm. or even fungi, like the brand Quorn, Q-U-R-N, like
yep.
your last guest mentioned, Jackie, I think. And so all these technology, the cell-based, the single cell protein, all these technology are surrounding around bioreactors. So that's what we're trying to promote. That's what we're trying to say to the world, is that going forward, our foods will be grown and extracted from these bioreactors. Why? Because not only it guarantees the contamination will not happen, so you won't have to use the crazy thing called herbicides or fertilizer or even antibiotic or hormone. Not only you don't need to use that, but also by using bioreactors, you control the space profile so that we don't have to do more deforestation to feed the whole world substantially and efficiently. That's what we're trying to say to the world.
So when I look at the supermarket today, right, I see maybe half or more of the supermarket is actually made out of processed food. So
right.
As a consumer myself, it doesn't really matter where the meat comes from. You know, after you, like, let's say you just buy a lasagna from the frozen section, it doesn't even look like meat.
You know? Right.
So it doesn't really matter. And the other day I had the Impossible pie from Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And when I cut it open, it looks exactly like beef. It smells like beef.
Okay.
You know, like, if I didn't know that this is soy based, I would have never known.
Yep, and you wouldn't care.
Yeah, I mean, it costs the same.
Yep.
And in fact, the Impossible pie is, there's more meat than the normal beef pie.
Well, I must say your observation is really sharp. You know, a lot sharper than a lot of my friends. I must say, you know, and you're right on. You're spot on. You know, look at the supermarket today. You know, you have more and more processed meat,
yes.
Processed seafood, even. You know, why? Number one is in my opinion is simply because of the consistency. You know, the meat, chicken and seafood, today, nowadays, it's getting harder and harder quality-wise to be consistent. You know, I guess part of it is because the feed, part of it is because the global warming,
yes.
Or whatever crazy reasons. But then again, the processed food for consumers, it's always consistent. You know, the flavor, the texture, the price even, you know,
yes.
It's always consistent. That's why it becomes more and more popular. And that in itself is telling you where the plant-based food industry, where the opportunity lies. You know, is that, in my opinion, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff like 3D printed steak. I don't think consumers will embrace that, you know. On the other hand, I think consumer will embrace a plant-based burger down the road, you know.
Yep.
Why? Because, you know, let me give you one example, the fishbowl. You know, the fishbowl, Singaporeans so, you know, so loved and have so much culture or so much things around it. You know, when talking about fishbowl, Singaporean has this pride, I feel. And but then again, you know, look at the fishbowl, the simple fishbowl, 70 or should I say 30 years ago, just 30 years ago, the fishbowls the Singaporean ate. Possibly has a lot more fish meat inside the ball than the fish balls you eat today.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So the fish balls you eat today possibly only have, well, should I say maybe 20-30% of fish meat, versus like just 30 years ago, it's totally in reverse. It's 70% fish meat.
Yes.
Why is that? Why is that happening? It's because the wild caught fish is getting ever more expensive, and you can't find good farm fish. Fish to use it to make fishbowl. And on top of that, there's so much crazy ingredients that is so cheap and so good to be made into the fishbowl. And that's what we're eating today. And you just don't know. So the fishbowl is on sale in the supermarket. You can actually call it a 70% plant-based already.
Yeah, it's almost, you know? There.
Yeah, that's right.
It's flour.
Same thing with the processed meat you were talking about, the sausage, the spam, the luncheon meat, you know. It is gradually happening in the supermarket. And I can only imagine one day when the animal protein becomes crazily expensive enough, that fishbowl, that processed food, processed meat will become 99% plant-based. You know, that's the kind of world I sort of imagine. But back to another issue you just raised up is that, you know, the impossible ingredients or a lot of the processed meat ingredients, well, you will say that, well, that ingredient list looks long, right?
Yes, scary.
But if scary. You have to understand the chicken or the beef or even the pork you're looking at, it doesn't come with any label. And if there's any label slap on it, the first and only ingredient is meat, right?
Yes.
And I tell you, wrong. Because they don't have to declare all the chemicals in the animal's life that they were injected, all the chemicals they were applying on along the way after the meat is cut. They don't apply all the heavy metal, all the microplastic that wild-caught seafood come across or digested in their life. If all those can be accounted for, if all those have to slap on the label, I guarantee you, you'd rather choose Impossible Burger than that real beef burger. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's why more and more people want to become flexitarian, at least. You know, if they're not able to become vegetarian, it's because that it's not the animal industry's fault. It's just that, you know, the world is so complicated today, you know, and nothing can be as simple as what it appears on the surface. And it takes a really sophisticated consumer to understand all these happening in the background.
Let's compare the Western world and us, the Asians. They have a lot of fancy names for this vegetarian food. But for us, it's because of religion and culture. Vegetarianism is not really... You know, the Western world is more like a big thing, like a big choice in life.
Right.
But for us, it's very subtle and in the background. Like, do you have issues translating plant-based into, you know, Mandarin or whatever other language?
Oh, tremendously, man. You know, that's one of the things I keep mentioning to people, especially the friends in China. You know, the translation is done awfully wrong, you know, in China, especially into Chinese language. You know, you see, they translate directly from plant meat, 植物肉, you know, which literally speaking, in if you understand Mandarin Chinese, 植物肉 is actually pretty, it doesn't sound tasty at all.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, if you want to translate back to English, that's more like a grassy meat or a tree meat, you know, so to speak. Would that be delicious to you? No, no way, you know. And some people in China came up with another translation called 人造肉. Basically, just artificial or synthetic meat. Again, it's not appetizing at all. It just make you feel yike. You know, how would I want to eat that? You know, and what's even worse is that these plant-based meat today is still like 20% to maybe 2-3 times more expensive.
Yes.
And then you are marketing such a premium product with such a lousy name. How can you convince people to jump on board? You know, I mean, they did it all wrong in China. But then again, you saw the media, they're lauded, Impossible Beyond Meat entering in China, they're gonna be successful. I think there's a lot of homework they need to do. You know, if the homework is not done appropriately, then this thing will never take off. You know?
But if we were to market without the words and just let the taste be the judge,
right?
Do you think eventually someone will find a word for it?
I think if you're talking just about Chinese market or should I say East Asian market, you know, I think the notion of mock meat is absolutely not gonna work, you know? In my opinion, I'm not quite familiar about Indian culture or other Southeast Asian culture, I have to be honest. But I'm very familiar with all the Asian, East Asian, should I say, Confucianism.
The Chinese culture,
in the sense that, you know, for the same token for Koreans and Japanese, is that, like I mentioned previously, is that meat has this very special place in the East Asian culture. Meat is medicinal. Meat is something holy, something totally premium that you can never replace. And so to say that you have something to replace that meat, number one, fundamentally, is wrong. And number two, no one is going to buy that belief. And so in my opinion, in the East Asian culture, if you want to promote plant-based ingredients, especially plant-based meat, you can't do it this way. You have to do it in the way that, you know, that people can accept. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And if you want to do it in the way that people can accept, you have to look back their traditional diet, they already have a lot of mock meat in the diet, you know?
Yep.
And so in my opinion, the only way to promote the plant-based meat is that you have to introduce more and more different kind of plant-based ingredient for them to make into their conventional tofu, conventional mock chicken, mock goose, you know, or whatever mock mutton that they already do it. And like, say for example, the Shanghai cuisine, if you're familiar with, there's a lot of different kind of mock meat in the Shanghai, traditional Shanghai cuisine. So what I imagine is that going forward into the future, especially for the Chinese market, these type of mock meat, the price and the marketing is done correctly, it will become more popular. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Alright, so actually this is very interesting. Maybe let's take this word tofu for example. There really isn't, I mean there is a translation, but people accept the word tofu even in the English world?
So, well, even in the Western world, tofu today has become ubiquitous and has been embraced from what I've seen, you know, all the way from US, Canada, all the way to Germany, even Switzerland, and even in Netherlands, you can get tofu in the supermarket, which is amazing. Yeah, which is amazing. Imagine it. So not just tofu, you know, sometimes you can even find tempeh what else. So a lot of these Asian mock meat had already been infiltrated into these Western market. Why? Because people think it's conventional, meaning that it's minimally processed. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to use, you know, easy to go into any kind of dishes. And so that's why more and more people embraced that kind of product. I remember just about my first time, when I first came to US was about back in 94, you know, 93, 94. Back then, you know, not even tofu, you know, soy milk is like, you can't find it in the supermarket. And today, well, you know, you got all kinds of plant-based milk. Not on top of that, the tofu brands is just amazing. You know, you go to Walmart, you go to Target, you go to any kind of supermarket, any kind of grocery stores, you always see a lot of different brands of tofu. And so that's why I think, you know, just this thing alone will conquer the world many times. If you come up with enough different kind of plant-based ingredients, and that's what exactly what we're doing, you know, is that if you come up with more different kind of protein for people to choose, then they will really embrace this type of protein. What we're trying to do is that we're trying to expand the kingdom of the microorganism protein. Is that, you know, imagine it, according to the scientists, there are about 300,000 species to maybe 1 million different species of microalgae on this planet, right? And imagine the kind of variety of the protein we can come up just with the microalgae. And why this is important? Because today, if you're a vegetarian or if you're flexitarian, the kind of plant-based protein you can have is, I can count with just one hand. Soy, wheat, pea, maybe a little bit quinoa and chickpea. And that's about it, right? But if you're animal eater, you eat everything, you know.
Yep.
You got at least 4 to 5 species of animals from the land. And if you're Japanese, you got 20 more species from the ocean. And that's about almost 30 different kinds of protein for you to choose from. That's a lot of protein if you're eating animals.
Yes.
And that's why it is so hard today to convince people to eat more plant-based foods. And so that's why a lot of the new companies like us were trying to come up with these new plant-based ingredients so that the tofu on the shelf will not just be soy or wheat. It will come with a lot more varieties and options and at a reasonable cost. Don't you think people will embrace it when that happens? I think people will.
I think so. I mean, it's like beer as well. Beer, there was only one or two brands.
Right on.
So, how do you combat the texture and the flavor? Are you trying to solve it out of non-meat?
Good question. You know, so texture-wise is actually, because I've been involved in plant-based meat industry for over 30 years. So I can tell you is that texture is not a thing. Texture is not a problem for the plant-based industry. So to simulate the meat-like or seafood-like texture is very easy. The key obstacle or difficulty is flavor. You know, imagine it. You know, today a lot of these plant-based meat, they claim that their products are 100% natural, and then you ask them to have a flavor that tastes just like beef.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you something. Can anyone think of 100% plant-based natural ingredient, and then you mesh it up together, and then voila, it tastes like pork or meat?
No.
No way. You know, it's like King's new clothes, or you're asking for a flying dragon. It's never gonna happen, you know? So I think people has to be realistic in the sense that if you want 100% natural ingredients in your foods, you cannot expect the foods to taste like animal. But I can make it taste pleasant. I can make it taste good, just not seriously like the animal protein you want to replace, number one. And number two is that if you really want it to taste crazily similar to the animal you used to have, then, well, man, you gotta give us some space. There are definitely some GMO, there are definitely some synthetic have to happen. And that's the case of impossible. Is that, in a sense, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, there's no gray area in this issue. It's pretty black and white in terms of flavor. And I think impossible, in my opinion, impossible, personally, I think they did a great job, is that they come clean. They tell the world that, yes, we use some GMO, but hey, you know, what can you expect? You're asking for a patty that's 100% plant-based, but taste and look and cook just like the real meat.
Even please,
that's
like
what
meat,
it happened. Like exactly. but they tell you. They didn't lie to you.
Yeah.
So I think for that, I give them a credit. I admire how they put it all together, you know.
Do you think you can find this blood compound in a microalgae or a very similar one?
Wonderful question. Actually, you can't. You can't. That's a company in San Diego actually did it already.
Oh.
So they're the beef bovine, right? Or whatever they call it, heme, that impossible used.
Yep.
Spell as H-E-M-E, you know, that ingredient actually has been extracted naturally from microalgae by a company out of San Diego. So, you know, it's not entirely impossible. Maybe I should take back that, you know, if you want something 100% natural from microalgae and to make it similar to the animal flavor, you know, it probably not entirely impossible, but that's gonna...
It's a difficult search.
Not gonna happen.
Yeah, it's
a difficult search. You're right, number one. Because remember, I told you there are 300,000 different species, maybe a million different species of microalgae in the world. So it's a daunting task that you have to embark on a dramatic and crazy search for those tiny little chemicals existed inside the animal protein to make that flavor. And then for somehow you have to combine it naturally and perfectly to simulate that flavor. So it is not entirely impossible, maybe I should say it this way, but then again, it is something possibly won't happen in our life, not even our children's generation, you know?
Oh, wow.
Because the data, you can imagine the data you have to accumulate in order to make that happen. We're talking about really huge data, and then you have to process it with the jargon we use so much today, artificial intelligence, to come up with a perfect flavor that's perfectly natural, you know? So that's something in a Star Wars, Star Wars time, like you mentioned last time,
yeah.
You know, only exists, you know? So I think it will take some time.
Then, so you say that your bioreactor takes about 3 days to produce. Do you think this has to be incorporated into any nation's food security program?
I don't think, other than Singapore, I don't think any nation, any country has, not even United Nations has noticed this before, you know, how much little time it needed to finish the production, and then you can just put it on the shelf, you know. I think Singapore, because we have so little space and we're not even having enough fresh water, I think Singapore is the only government in the world really paying attention to this technology and and the food security supply chain disruption issues, even before the pandemic. I don't think Israel is doing anything on that either.
Well, I mean, they have space to grow.
That's right. That's right. They have a lot more space than us here in Singapore, you know, even though we're often compared to Israel as the Israel in the East. But then again, we're truly the nation that facing the food security crisis, even before the pandemic. And so Singapore has done so many crazy and wonderful things to make this space happen. And we're lucky to say that we're one of the technology that Singapore government is supporting and trying to make it a reality for the world.
So how long would it be? I mean, is it already in the stores for your Makoyaki stuff?
Not yet, but possibly pretty soon. You know, we're still pre-revenue as a startup. You know, but we foresee that we're gonna generate our first sales definitely by the end of the year, and that customer is going to make it into some plant-based products going on to the grocery store for sale. Definitely next year. You will see some products that are made with our ingredients hopefully by next year.
So I think next year when I try it, call you back.
No problem. Yeah.
All right. This is really, really exciting. Actually, I learned a lot today. I mean, this single cell protein, or macroalgae protein, is really different. I don't think I've seen much people talk about this space in general. But everyone is focusing on the flashy cellular science.
Right. You know, that's what you call marketing. You know, the cell-based industry, I think they spend a lot more marketing dollars to tell people how wonderful, how rosy the future could be, you know. But then again, as an industry, that's a minimum 10-year, possibly even 20-year to realize.
Oh wow, that's long.
Yeah, it's long. I mean, there's a lot of technology you have to develop, you know. And talking about us, single cell protein, microorganism protein, it is not, you know, it can happen. If it's not the pandemic, you know, we should already have products on the shelf right now, you know. And so the technology is really ready, very ready. All it takes is just for someone like me to put everything together and make it happen and take it to the market, you know. And so I was just talking to my team the other day, you know, it is really time that we think that we really should put some marketing dollar to promote this industry and let the world understand and know that there is something even more ancient and more fundamental and more natural for them to use as an ingredient, as a new ingredient in a lot of different kind of foods, you know.
And the good thing is this future is only next year.
Yeah, it is right here. Yeah, exactly. And it's been here, maybe should I say, it's been here for thousands of millions of years. You know, the recent fossil record just proven that microalgae seriously is the mother of all the plants. And we know that you first have the plants, then you have the animal. And so you could even say microalgae is the mother of all the living things in the world, you know, so to speak.
Looking forward to finding this in the store. Are you able to kind of tease the brand or how it looks like?
So the first product that we're working with this food manufacturer right now is a protein drink.
Okay.
Originally, we're thinking of making it into a plant milk. And this company shows up, they have another brilliant idea, which, you know, I guess I still have to keep it a secret, but then again, you know, it's a protein drink that we, in the Asian market, which is very, very ubiquitous.
Yes. Yep.
It's about $1.6 billion
ooh,
every year, just in the Asian market, you know.
Yep.
And it goes all the way to a lot of Southeast Asian market as well, you know. It's not just in the East Asian market. And so that itself is pretty big, and so we were sold, and so we pivot our plant milk project into that plant-based protein drink project. And so we're gonna first launch that drink into a lot of the Asian markets hopefully next year.
All right, I will look out for that.
Yep, no problem.
All right, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Yip. Yeah.